I haven't heard anything from Hassan at all. Just thought he might be like waist deep in an all-you-can-eat buffet somewhere.
I think you got away with that because I think he was just connecting to audio as you said that.
Have a go at me. What's going on, Johannes? Welcome back to another episode of Somewhere in Between, the early careers podcast brought to you by the Royal College of GPs. I'm Anthony and I'm back with Johannes and Mira today. Hi guys.
Hi.
Hello.
This week's episode is all about the first 100 days post-CCT, and Johannes and Hatim caught up with two fairly recently qualified GPs, Thuva and Helena, earlier this week for a conversation about how they've experienced the transition from trainee to post-CCT GP. And we're going to jump straight into their conversation, and then we're going to be reflecting and catching up on it afterwards. So take a listen now.
So I guess the first question is, how was that transition?
Yeah, the transition's been really good. It's obviously a weird time to be qualifying and then starting as a salary GP. But I was lucky to stay in the practice that I am. So it's been an easy transition in terms of familiarity. I would say I'm really enjoying the getting to know a patient list. I didn't have a list as a trainee. I don't know if that's the same for everyone, but I didn't have a patient list as a trainee. And I really feel like having a patient list feels more like the definition of being a GP, and providing that sort of chronic care, chronic conditions, longer term care. That's also probably the hardest bit about it as well, in that I managed to get through most of my training without doing much titration of diabetes medication and thinking about, you know, managing our chronic conditions. And now that is a huge part of what I do each day. But it's been a steep learning curve, and I think it's been really positive. Not sure if I have anything else to say on that at the moment. Yeah.
Awesome. And so you talked about, I guess, that transition period, but actually being in the same surgery, I feel like a lot of people have that experience, and that probably does help. I mean, reflecting on the patient list thing, I mean, that's definitely a big factor, isn't it? I mean, as an SD3 currently, I tend to have patients that you adopt and you kind of follow and you kind of learn from, but you don't really have that responsibility and on having that this is your patient. So you ultimately, you know that actually it's under someone else. So I guess it's a bit of a safety net, and that safety net disappears. So, but what's your transition been like, and have you been working in the same surgery that you trained in?
I for whichever reasons you want to say, I think for the fact that I sought out of opportunities, I moved elsewhere, and not just because of that. I think it's been a tough time, like Helen said. You know, pandemic. It wasn't the best time to qualify, as you know. You know, we were in uncertainty as to whether we would even finish on time in August. So that was a challenge in itself. That also led to other challenges in that I had my job lined up a year beforehand, and then the fellowship was being changed from HEE to the STP to the HEE. So that fell through. So I had that pressure and stress during the thing as well, trying to renegotiate a contract. Luckily, I ended up with the same deal that I had previously agreed on. So moving across from Wolverhampton to Walsall, they're just neighbouring areas, but you know, everything is so different. The services that operate are different. You know, how you refer to the hospital is different. How things are done in practice is different, and it makes you realise how different every GP practice in the country is, and how much more differences there are when you move across the border of a good CCT. It's huge, but I guess the benefit of being in general practice is that the team is so small and you're so well-knit that you can just bounce things off people, and you learn so quickly, and the support is there for you. That was the benefit of that. In terms of settling in, I think one of the biggest shockers to the system was that, you know, there is no longer that person that you can ask the question to. The final call is with you. You've got to just, you know, look up the guidelines and decide, make that call. Sometimes even more so your colleagues come to you, because I'm a GP in derm. So all the derm cases get booked in with me. And we've got a physiotherapist who's an advanced care practitioner, and a pharmacist who's there practicing on their own, seeing clinical patients, and an ANP, and I'm the GP on call, and everyone comes to you for advice. And you're like, I think that's a big shocker to the system. There's nothing that will prepare you for that.
Both of you kind of mentioned fellowships previously to us when we had a pre-chat, and you mentioned a little bit there about sort of a fellowship for you. What did you know about beforehand, and some of these now available fellowships after UCCT, and how helpful has it been in helping you structure your week?
So I applied for the fellowship really because I just wanted to do a little bit more than 4 sessions a week at work, but didn't want to do any more clinical work. So that was really my reasoning for going for a fellowship. And I'm really glad I did. I was kind of intimidated by applying, but actually it turns out that I think it's really accessible to anyone who wants to do a fellowship. And I would encourage anyone who is keen to carry on having some formal learning and to do something that's not clinical, but in a structured way, to consider it. My fellowship through Islington is, I've been given a project by the Islington GP Federation to try and see if we can set up a physio, sort of physios within general practice, using the additional roles reimbursement scheme for PCNs. And so mine is sort of a leadership and management type project, but you can, there's a huge range, you know, there's clinical, more clinical spins, more managerial, more leadership type spins, and the world's really your oyster in terms of what you pick. And I think it's not just the whatever sort of clinical or non-clinical project you get given, there's also all the additional support, so you also kind of get this kind of new version of VTS through it. You get, you know, some structured group teaching. In Islington, we're all given a mentor or a coach to help us for the year, which has been invaluable. And you also get to shadow people who are within, you know, who have got some experience, you know, either clinical or non-clinical people who work at PCN level or above, at ECG level, and just to understand a little bit more about the politics behind the scenes in general practice. So it's been a real eye-opener and a really positive way of doing a little bit more work, but not being more patient contact, which has been great.
And I'm assuming it provides quite a nice balance as well, Helena.
Yeah, definitely a really nice balance. I have a 2-year-old daughter, and I didn't want to take on more work that might mean that I didn't get home on time for another day of the week. So it's been a really good sort of, you know, consider myself to have 3 jobs effectively, you know, clinical spin job and mum life. So it's made a much nicer balance for me.
I think that's a really popular approach to take in general practice these days. You know, a lot of us are going into it with a view to doing a few clinical sessions and then kind of embellishing it with something else. Was there anything else you looked at apart from spin fellowships that would give you a similar kind of work-life balance?
A few of my friends have gone into teaching through the local medical schools, and that seems like a really flexible route as an alternative. There are actually spins with medical education if you wanted to do that, but you can also just get involved with the local medical schools for teaching once you're, and you know, you can do that as a trainee, but perhaps there's slightly more options once you're qualified. But yeah, most of my friends, well, actually a lot of my friends went for a spin post qualification. And other people want to do out of hours work or do, you know, supplement their salary job with some locuming and that sort of thing. It just wasn't what I wanted to do personally, but there's loads of options.
Toby, you have a big interest in dermatology. How did you go about driving that forward and including that in your weekly plan?
So that's where I had the difficulties over the transition period, in that I'd agreed for this dermatology fellowship a year beforehand. So I'd been looking for this opportunity, and it was literally hard to come by. It was one of the opportunities that was scarce. The only way I managed to get it is because I had it a year before that I planned. The year when we qualified, they weren't taking anyone else for dermatologists because it was, you know, as you know, it's a very popular specialty for GPs to have special interest in. So there was so much demand that they didn't have any spaces left. But then because of the change in the fellowship structure and the paying structure, there were difficulties in agreeing the sessional structure to it. I am lucky in that the way it's set up is Modality LLP, which is run by Modality Partnership, one of the biggest super federations in the country, has a subcontract to Sandon Hospital, where we see patients that GPs refer to them, and there are direct referrals to us through the CCG route as well. So we see the full spectrum of dermatological conditions, and we've got a lot of the services in-house, from minor surgery to laser therapy for acne, hidradenitis suppurativa, to minor surgery for simple lesions that are, you know, have functional disability, that impair functionalities. And so in terms of the way they've set it up as a training program is that we initially spend about a month or two sitting into the clinic sessions. So we see the plethora of patients that come through and the conditions. So we get a rough idea as to how to manage those patients. Whilst we're doing that, we're also on the dermatology diploma program and start learning the basics of dermatology. And gradually what they do is they give you a few appointments, a few patients per clinic, so that you have the time to see the patient, discuss it with your supervisor, just as you would in GP practice, and go back and put a plan together and, you know, do the clinic letter and manage the patient yourself. And again, progressively, they, you know, put more patients into your clinic and you come down to 15 minutes of patients or however it is, depending on the type of appointment. If it's a normal appointment, around 15 minutes. If it's minor surgery, about half an hour, 20 minutes. And so it's been a steep learning curve, as it is for everything, especially in terms of having that depth of knowledge that you don't necessarily have as a GP.
So does your career at the moment actually feel like general practice? Because it sounds like a lot of what you're doing is dermatology. Is this something you were doing in your GP training and that's kind of progressed quite naturally, or is this a kind of a last minute pivot when you CCT'd?
You're absolutely right. I do think about that. I think things have just fallen into place for me, luckily. So three years ago, I did my Botox and aesthetic course with Derma Medical, and, you know, then gradually with setting up a private practice myself, gradually I built up the cosmetic experience and then became a trainer for them nationally and started training for them. Apart from that, I did not have any other dermatology experience or diploma or anything when I applied for this program. But the way I did it was I approached the service lead. I sat in a few clinics, you know, and showed genuine interest. And then I applied for the program. And I had a panel interview, as you would generally. And I had the program because I guess I planned well in advance, like a year before we were looking for jobs. So I guess that was helpful. So that's how I think I got the job, because I was just planning in advance and things just fell into place that meant that, you know, the opportunity was there. In terms of, does it feel like general practice for me? That's an interesting question, because in some ways, as GPs, you always have that approach to patients' care where you think about all the aspects, not just the dermatology. You're here for this condition. I need to investigate you for this. And this is what I'm going to do. And I'm going to send it back to the GP. So you do have the understanding of the full system. So you know when you're writing clinic letters, how it's going to be, the actions you're asking from the GP or the ask you're making from the GP, is it feasible? Is it possible? And you think about that. And so you sort of try to help them in some ways, rather more so than maybe hospital consultants would be. And are a lot more detailed in the way we put plans in place so that that can happen. But I guess it is just focused mostly on dermatology, but dermatology is bulk of GP's work. You see a lot of skin conditions in general practice. So is it so different? I don't know. I find it's a good mix because I have that to add in my day-to-day practice as well for my patients. And that's a big difference because people don't have to travel a huge distance. They don't have to go to hospital. They come see me as a GP and I can do everything to the max before resource or technicality limits me from doing that in GP practice. So in that way, well, I think it's very good and it's adding to my career as a GP or a profession as a GP rather than taking away from it.
It's a challenge, isn't it, I guess, when you do finish, in terms of how far ahead you start to plan for that transition and then what you put in place beforehand. How soon would you say people should start thinking about that are coming to the end of their training? And how do you balance all of that with the uncertainty of exams, trying to get your portfolio signed off? how can you best prepare for it all?
Sure. I think a year isn't unreasonable because, you know, for example, you know, the other fellowships that are there, the Medical Directors Fellowship, everything, all of these things you have to plan for a year in advance. Even even when it comes to specialty application, you have to plan a year in advance, right? I think that's a good habit to stick to because you have to, these opportunities tend to have that length of period of time attached to them as the time that you need to plan for, because that's when the applications are set in so that you can plan ahead for the year. You raise a valid point in the exams. I guess it's good if you can get them out the way early, but most of these opportunities come with they do understand that you've got these exams to prepare for at the same time. And you know, there are certain cases where you might not be successful. So there's a clause in the, you know, offer that might say, you know, you have to qualify as a GP before this, you can start this program. And in my case, they were very supportive in the fact that we had no exam to pass because there was no exam that we could do for the 3 months that we were struggling. They were like, we know what's happening. Don't worry about it. It's okay. You know, I'm sure we'll hear something soon. So they are supportive on the other end. But again, they can only support you if you've got the offer, and you can only get the offer if you start looking. So I think the earlier you start looking, the better for you. Because, for example, if you find that in the job application or the advert that they want this, this, and this, then you can prepare. You've got time to do those things, at least for the next round.
That makes a lot of sense. Helena, you transitioned into continuing your same practice. What were the first few days like? Was it almost like you were turning up and doing your normal job? Or was there a sudden change in the way that your colleagues would even interact with you? Now you are now a post-CCT GP.
Yeah, it did feel a little bit like just turning up for the next day. The only difference being that I was really slow to transition to 10 minutes. And because I knew that I was staying, no one was really too worried about me getting to 10 minutes because we knew that I would have to when I qualified. So I suppose the main difference for me was on the 8th of December, I was having a few more blocked out sessions than I was on the 9th of December. But apart from that, it felt very much the same. I suppose as time goes by, you realise that you have taken on more and more responsibility for things. And I would also say that part of the transition, part of how easy that transition felt for me was that I chose to take a patient list about 2 months before I qualified. And I think if you are, I know this is not the same for everyone, but if you are taking a job at the practice where you're qualifying or even if you're not, I found it really helpful to take on that list whilst I was still having tutorials and having all that extra support, just so that I could get used to the volume of DocMan and queries that come up from meds management that maybe you haven't been fully submerged into before. And so all of that had felt like a kind of quite a gradual thing over the 2 months preceding qualification. The main change was just that supposedly I was meant to be talking to patients in 10 minutes, but that still doesn't happen anyway, so it's very much the same.
I guess the key thing that I'm hearing from both of you is preparation is key, whatever it may be that you end up doing. A lot of people take time out after they finish their training. What do you feel about that? I mean, Tibby, you've been doing mainly dermatology work, so maybe do you have any anxieties about necessarily stepping away from traditional general practice for a long period of time or for even those first 3 months after you qualify? Do you think that has any impact on the future, or is it okay to sort of take a bit of time out and go back?
That's a very interesting question. Initially, pre-pandemic, the thought of taking a year out and traveling up, exploring something was at the top of my mind. But of course, the pandemic put a stop to that. Because I've been on the traditional roller coaster of high school to med school to foundation to training, not stopped a year. So I thought maybe it was time, but pandemic put a stop to that. I did take a month out, but I ended up doing just other stuff and didn't really get to rest. So I wouldn't call it time out. In terms of taking time out, I think there is no better time to take out than after finishing training, because you know it's an achievement, and I think it's a good time to take some time and reflect on what you want as a career. Because general practice, what it is today, wasn't what it was a decade ago. It's so flexible and it's for you to craft your deep week as you want it to be. And, you know, in NHS England, everyone is so supportive and understanding of this because of the retention crisis we have, that it's, I think it's if anything, it's a bonus that, you know, you get the choice or you have the control of being able to craft that week. And I think you should make most of that. And in my general practice is in a very deprived area in Warsaw, so it's a very tough job. None of my consultations are 10 minutes and I'll be out totally honest, because they're either speaking in a different language with a translator, or there are multi-comorbid patients that I don't limit myself with time, because it's impossible. If you limit yourself with time mentally, you won't do well in that consultation. I'd rather spend that extra 5 minutes and answer the patient and give the patient a good plan and move on to the next patient. And it means I have less admin time. I did my job well. I'd rather do that. But even then, there is a pressure on you and there is a risk of burnout. So that's why I'm only doing 2 days, because of the challenging sort of setting I work in. Every GP practice is different. It really does depend on you and what you want and what your practice offers you. And every practice offers you something completely different. There's hardly much similarity, very few similarities between them, apart from your GP and your treating patients. And
right. I like your point about crafting that opportunity for yourself. And I think ultimately that's what it comes down to, is thinking ahead, crafting, taking your time, and not being too rushed into anything is the best way to handle this for the first few months after you finish. Thank you both for your time. I guess what I'm going to leave you both with is, if there's any parting things that you want to say, any tips that those are going to be finishing in August that you think would be helpful for them as they start thinking about the next few months.
Yeah, I would just say, if you're not sure what you want to do, or you've got a couple of options available and you're a bit stuck, I actually had some coaching sessions through the professional support unit and through the London Deanery, and I couldn't recommend that more highly. I actually did it as I returned from maternity leave, because I was coming back to only, I think, 6 months of part-time training before I qualified, and I was really nervous about hitting the ground running and all the hoops that I had to jump through for the portfolio, and then getting a job lined up. And some people are really organized, but I didn't really have that option, because I went away on maternity leave and had to come back and get it all done quite quickly. And I think lots of people feel like there's so many opportunities, which is great, but they're just not sure what they want to get out of it. And the professional support unit offers I think I had 4 sessions of coaching, just to kind of work through what I was stuck on in terms of decision making, and to make a plan going forward, and also to think about my return to work as well. So that was invaluable. And I would, if you're feeling stuck, then I would just contact them. That's the kind of thing you just don't get anymore when you're not a trainee. So just make the most of it while you have the opportunity. And my other piece of advice would just be to set something up with your VTS friends or your friends within the practice, and keep that peer support going. It's one benefit of the SPIN program that you do get that you still get that peer group discussion. But if you're not doing a SPIN, and even if you are, I think it's really valuable to not just, obviously everyone has friends and they just keep up their friends, but to also think about it as being colleagues and peers and colleagues, and keeping up with them that way too. Those would be my 2 main pieces of advice.
I love that. And the professional support unit is a really interesting tip, actually. And I guess coaching generally has a big potential to really help sort of give us the direction that we need. And I'm sure there's similar resources or opportunities available in all areas. And so it's definitely worth asking that question of your people that have recently qualified, and also of your program directors, or even contact your local training hub. Tilly, what are your tips?
So as the first 5 network facilitator for the training hub, I can tell you that, coaching is just so useful. Black Country was luckily one of the pioneering sites because of our recruitment crisis a few years ago that pioneered the coaching initiative a couple of years ago. It's just remarkable how much you get out of a coaching session, because it doesn't feed you the answers. It makes you think on the spot and come up with your own answers for your own questions that you don't know you have. It makes you ask yourself questions that you don't think you had in your mind as well. So it's really, really useful. The other thing I would add is that coaching is now a national scheme, and every STP training hub has been commissioned to offer coaching. So it's available to you. And so is the First Five Network. Every in-practice fellow in the country has been offered a First Five Network, in where you have essentially VTS, where you get paid to be there in one session. You get an additional session of CPD where you get to attend and do what you did in VTS and sit and learn. And we've really grown quite well, that community in the Black Country. And it just feels like VTS once again. And it's really, really helpful because you can bounce off ideas and problems and come up with practical solutions that make your day-to-day life a lot better. Because if anyone tells you otherwise, I would disagree. GP is a very hard job. It's an impossible job. So we need the support to make use of what you have.
Cool. So that was really interesting listening to Thuva and Helenos. So it's always interesting to listen to like people who are going through the same thing as me, but in slightly different ways. I mean, Helena's works very close to where I work in North London. Thuva's obviously a bit further north in England. So it's definitely really interesting to hear about how things are happening differently. And also just, again, like the different range of opportunities that exist post-CCT. I think for me, like, I've also stayed working in my training practice, which I think has had some real benefits in terms of feeling comfortable, knowing the team, not having to adjust to loads of new systems on top of taking on slightly more independence and responsibility within the practice. So I think that, you know, for me, it was definitely the right decision to stay there. When I see on like Resilient GP or other like social media groups on Facebook and other places, I've often seen the question come up about people asking, should I stay in my training practice or should I not? And there's always kind of a mixed bag. Some people always say, definitely don't do it. You'll always be seen as the trainee. People like dump work on you inappropriately and you'll never kind of like move beyond that. Other people say, for the same reasons that I found, it's really good to have that additional support in those early days. And that's what I found so far. And, you know, it's been a real pleasure working in my practice as a GP post-CCT. And to be honest, it was quite anticlimactic. Nothing really changed from one day to the next. And still nothing really feels like it's changed. The only thing in terms my like clinical work that has changed since finishing is that I now do the substance misuse clinic. So it's me and one of the partners who share it. So all about methadone prescribing and like dosage adjustments and things, which is something I'd been interested in before and did like the RCGP certificate for. So it was good to be able to do like an extra bit of work in the practice. And it's, you know, just again adds variety to the sessions that I do there. But otherwise, yeah, things really didn't change very much. And I think that's, you know, probably true for lots of people if they stay in the training practice. Now that it's been like a few months since I finished, I'm definitely starting to think about what next. Now that I kind of like feel a bit more secure. I've also just moved house. So whether I will relocate or move around or just want to try different things when it comes to my clinical work, is definitely something that I'm feeling much more confident and comfortable with the idea of now that it's a few months down the line post-CCT, I've survived and realized that I can do it okay.
I mean, you could always do it, Anthony. I think we had no doubts about that, did we, Yanis? And I think, and again, in terms of congratulations on the house move, obviously on the podcast, you can't see what we can see, but Anthony's got a beautiful garden background whilst he sat in his conservatory. So we're quite jealous of that. I think I really enjoyed listening to the conversation and hearing what you've just said, Anthony, because as a GPST2, I suppose we're just mired in rotas and hospital jobs and trying to see it through to the end, to that final ST3 push. But actually, that's not the end goal is what comes after that, I suppose. And it's just reassuring to know that there are so many options out there and that you're not really limited to one thing. So if you see somebody working in a particular style or fashion that you're really interested in, ask the questions, ask how they got into that route. Because from, you know, listening to Helena and Thuva and yourself, Anthony, and other people who I've known who have CCT'd, it's that there's so many different routes into lots of different things. And that's what I found really interesting. I guess, and the question that I would want to ask you that Tuva and Helena covered a little bit is, in terms of finding that balance of knowing how much clinical work you wanted to do and how much of the other stuff you wanted to do? Because you're a bit of a master of your own time now, aren't you, really? So how did you decide that?
Yeah, I mean, it is a tricky balance to get right. And I imagine it will vary from person to person. You know, ultimately, I was just finishing. I thought there's probably like a minimum number of sessions that I probably should be doing, at least, you know, for the first 3-6 months, just to really like bed in and be 100% more confident in what I'm doing. So, you know, I do 5 clinical sessions, to be honest. At the minute, that is feeling like a little bit on too much, just in terms of like balancing everything else. So I am going to be cutting down on the number of sessions that I do now. Some people though, will want to do more. And again, particularly if you can kind of incorporate other bits of not like core GP work into the clinical stuff that you're doing, then perhaps it's easier to do more. And obviously, it depends on what other people's responsibilities are. But I don't think there's any right or wrong answer. You know, most people that I know are doing somewhere between like 4 to 10 plus sessions, which would definitely not be something that I would be able to maintain. But I think so long as you're doing something which you're comfortable and confident with, you'll get to know what that is. You know, towards the end of your GP training, you'll think, oh, actually, this feels like a good amount for me. And for me, I think it had a bit of extra help in getting adjusted to what felt comfortable, because I'd gone to less than full time before I was finishing. So I had a bit more experience of, oh, actually, this kind of is a bit of a better balance for me. Whereas, you know, when I was doing full time, the like equivalent of 7 clinical sessions or whatever it was, I knew that that's not something that I would be interested in doing post CCT. It does feel like a lot. And so, you know, for me, a piece of advice that I would give to people is when you finish training, just like take the opportunity to breathe a little bit. Like you've been through this like 3+ year treadmill of like portfolio, endless assessments, exams, you know, moving job regularly. When you finish and you get your CCT, it really is an opportunity for you to be, as you say, like master of your own time. And so just take it as an opportunity to pause, take a breath, you know, just go with the kind of like find a new flow that works for you. And I think don't feel the need to necessarily tie yourself down to, you know, filling your entire week straight away. There are so many opportunities out there, as we said. And if you just say yes to everything immediately, then your week will fill up very quickly. And that might not necessarily be the right thing to do. For some people, if you know exactly what it is that you want to do, there's an opportunity there, which is something that you're really passionate about. Of course, go for it. But, you know, you've heard from like Helena and Thiva, there are so many different things going on that you'll always speak to people who are doing a million and one different things. It can add a lot of pressure to feeling, oh, I need to be doing that as well. But actually, I think there's something to be said for just taking a breath, pausing and reflecting on what really drives you and motivates you and what you want to do longer term.
Yeah, I think that's one of the really nice things about GP is that you can pick a number of sessions for your main job. And then there are just so many options for kind of topping that up. And I think one of the things that Thiva mentioned that we discussed before we started recording was the idea of kind of getting in there a year early. And I don't know if that's necessarily, I don't think that's necessary for everyone to jump in and to be that prepared. The other thing to bear in mind is just that, you know, you don't need to set everything up immediately. You don't need to land into the perfect role or the perfect set of roles or the perfect number of hours. So I think, yeah, a year is probably a good lead-in time, but that doesn't have to happen in your ST3 year. But it's definitely good to just start chatting with other people who are post-CCT, because there are so many incredible experiences out there. And you can just start to kind of piece together some ideas and find a number of hours that works for you and a number of different things that interest you. And like you're saying, you know, life throws things at you like a house move, but moving out of area. Things will always come up. So trying to overplan it and have the perfect design of your future, it's never going to work out that way anyway. So just be flexible and be open to opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, sorry, Ant.
I was going to say, I think like lots of people throughout the course of a whole career in general practice have lots of individual careers. So they'll do like, you know, a portion of time doing where they're really focused on teaching. They'll do a portion of time where they're really focused on something more like policy-based, or it's like an LMC or like BMA or NHS England or CCG stuff, wherever it might be. And then they'll have another chunk where they might just be doing more clinical stuff, fewer sessions, having more free time, you know, and all of this will change as, you know, they might be starting families, moving, having other responsibilities. So I think the beauty of general practice, as we always say, is that flexibility and the fact that you can carve out loads of different niches and go on a really unique individual journey across the course of a 30, 40 year career that you can have in primary care.
I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's that we have a unique and individual approach to it, which I guess having done hospital medicine and other things before, it's the unique thing that's attracted a lot of people to this specialty. We've all done F1 and F2 where you're kind of banded together. You've just finished university, you're doing rotas together and you're kind of fighting through it all until you can find the thing that attracts you, whatever specialty that may be. But when you get to GP training, regardless of where you are in the country, although you will have peers who have gone through a very similar route as yourself, there'll be lots equally as many other people who have done very different things as well. And I think that's the exciting part of general practice. And I guess one of the things that Helena sort of mentioned, which will be applicable to lots of people who are listening to this, is they've either gone through training, having a family, having maternity leave and coming back part-time, or that they've decided to have children later on, or indeed with, you know, other people going part-time for lots of other different reasons as well. And how do you fit in exams and all of these other things before you have to think about CCT? So I guess sometimes we feel like time is our own enemy, but actually it's to know that that road is continuing. And as you rightly said, Johannes, you don't have to pre-plan everything all at once. You've got many years and you may be a different person 10 years down the line in your career. And you think, actually, I want to do a bit of this or I want to do a bit of that. I suppose one of the facets of a CCT life that we didn't really cover for that a GP can do is getting involved in sort of the fields of research, which, you know, there are very strong links between primary care and the research world. But I guess I probably should pass that on to my esteemed academic colleague, Johannes, in terms of, you know, there's lots of good options for people who are interested in research as trainees in a post-CCT world. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we had a chat in our BTS session last week with an academic post-CCT who's currently working on her PhD. And there are lots of kind of traditional approaches where you can just, you know, become an academic in primary care. But equally, it's something that you can dip your toe into through things like the Clinical Research Network. And you can just do a bit of research for your practice. And again, you can tune it to your liking. Like it's completely flexible. And I just encourage dabbling in all areas of practice because you don't know unless you try, do you? And I think while it's completely admirable to kind of do clinical sessions and, you know, keep it simple, I personally am very guilty of spending my whole life dabbling. And it's made life more colourful and more interesting. So, from an academic perspective and just in general, I think see what's out there, make connections. And if there is an area of primary care that that you're interested in, I think one really important thing to highlight is just that, you know, our experience of research in training quite often is centred around things like quality improvement projects, which kind of cast the fear of God into us. And that's really not what research is. And there are dry sides to research, but it can be really interesting as well. And it's an opportunity to really make a difference to your practice and to your community as well. So definitely get involved.
I really liked what you said before, Johannes, as well, about everything doesn't need to be perfect. Like, you know, people have to try out things to know what works for them. There's very little chance that the career that you first start with is going to be the one that's exactly right for you. And so I think it's, you know, accepting that nothing is permanent. You can always change things and move things around to fit. And, you know, what's a perfect fit now, as we say, will be a very different to the perfect fit that you might have in a few years time. So I think, yeah, don't strive for perfection at any point, but particularly when you're first starting out, because it's just not something that anybody has. And we're all just learning as we go along and working out what works.
I mean, can you imagine that tagline telling that to all our 18-year-old aspiring medical students? Don't strive for perfection. Imagine telling us all of that. You're right. No, you're entirely right. And I think that life just throws all these different things at you, whether it be training or your own personal life, that that, you know, that's just such a true sentiment. I think one of the things that was mentioned in the conversation was about the sort of fellowship scheme. And I suppose that's something I did want to touch upon. And, you know, hopefully to people who are listening, people are aware that this is a scheme that's out there for all ST3s who are about to CCT, that you are eligible to apply for a fellowship. And it's certainly something that I'd sort of heard about a little bit in ST1, but I didn't really know very much about really what it is about. So they're called SPIN fellowships, and they sort of vary depending on which part of the country you're in, but it sort of stands for the Salaries Portfolio Innovation Scheme. And that the whole point is that people recognize that when people graduate, our aim is not just to work well, for some people work 10 sessions a week, but to have that variety in life that hopefully makes people want to continue to do their clinical sessions for 20, 30, 40 years, because they've got a bit of a buffer of doing something else that they're interested in. And effectively, it's an introduction into permanent GP employment, and you get a portfolio opportunity for 2 years where a couple of sessions a week are funded and you would work clinical sessions 4 to 7 sessions a week. And I think, as Helena said, her project is in leadership and management, but there are educational roles. There are also roles in clinical settings. People set up projects depending on what's close to them, be it social prescribing or looking at, you know, health equality and various other things. So I suppose if you're at a bit of a loose end and you're not really sure what's available in your area, Google it, have a look, speak to your program directors and see what's available. As Johanna said, we had a really good VTS session last week speaking to former trainees of our VTS group and actually hearing the varied stories of what they'd done, and some of them had done fellowships, others hadn't. It just really opened your eyes to all the opportunities that are available out there. And I think the other thing I wanted to sort of briefly talk about was coaching. I mean, have you guys ever accessed coaching or thought that was something you would do? Because I like Helena, I kind of thought this was just for trainees in dire straits, or there was people going through a lot of hardship and it wasn't necessarily something accessible to me. What about you guys? And have you done coaching before?
Yeah, I have had coaching in a number of different settings, but I guess particularly like most relevant to my GP career is I got coaching through the professional support unit, and that was a really good opportunity. I did it just after I'd finished my fellowship, and I was like trying to plan what I was going to do next and what I wanted to do longer term and what the right balance of stuff would be for me. And it was a really good opportunity to just have the space, I guess, to reflect, think about things in a slightly different way, put lots of like weird random thoughts which were all just floating around in my head in no particular order into something which felt a bit more coherent. And I think it's a really great opportunity, and it's something that definitely is probably underutilized by trainees, you know. So that coaching through the PSU is something that that, you know, anybody in our area can act. I imagine there's a similar offer in most areas, and I think coaching can be really, really useful, particularly as, you know, as you're coming towards your CCT and you're starting to think about things. If you have some uncertainties, they're not, you know, coaching isn't necessarily going to give you all the answers, but it's a really useful way to help at least start to navigate some of the decisions that you need to make post CCT.
Yeah, so I did some coaching in Cornwall when I was an F2, and just in terms of kind of deciding what I wanted to do in training and just what direction I wanted to go in general. And I think, like you said, Anne, it's not that it's there to give you answers, it's just that it kind of forces you to set time aside to have the conversation, and also it just lets you bounce ideas off someone who is kind of completely removed from the situation. They don't have any vested interests. They're kind of normally outside the medical profession to some extent. And they just give you the time and the space to kind of throw ideas out there. And normally you come up with your own plan as a result of it. And I'm not sure why it is so underused. I think it's one of those things like mentoring that kind of gets offered, and I think a lot of the time we feel like we don't have time for it, or maybe we don't need it because we're kind of on top of things. But it is a really good way just to give yourself the time and space just to kind of clear your mind and get back on track. So I definitely encourage people to give it a go. Might have to dip my toe back into that one as well.
And on the mentoring side of things as well, I think it is important to always plug some RCGP things. So the RCGP have now got a mentoring platform which is accessible to everybody. So you can go on there, log into the mentoring platform. You can log in as either looking for a mentor, or if you're also interested in mentoring others, if you've got particular skills or interests that you think would be valuable to others, you can also become a mentor as well as a mentee. And then that can help connect you with people, not necessarily who are even working locally to you, but people who have shared interests, things that you're interested in, who can again give you a different insight into all of the different career opportunities that there are available in the wonderful world of general practice.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think basically the biggest message in all of this is that GP is great and there are lots of opportunities out there, but also the important thing is to communicate. Now COVID is lifted, we can go and hug people and also speak to them. So, I mean, hug people with consent, of course, but it's about speaking to your colleagues and people who have worked in other scenarios that you may have not even thought about, or whether you're speaking to people still virtually or through Zoom, through a coaching platform or through the RCGP mentor network. Effectively, the options are endless. And hopefully you sort of enjoyed the content that we've done in this episode today. We obviously started this podcast initially aimed at AITs, but as we understand, it's a spectrum of being somewhere in between, from those first days of being an associate in training all the way through to CCT. So we thought it was really important to bring some perspectives of people who have just qualified and are in their first 100 days, which obviously also includes our beloved host, Ant.
Yeah, although it's a few more than 100 now, way past that 100 milestone. But yeah, I think it's been a really interesting journey. I think, you know, I felt quite apprehensive before CCT about the transition and how it would be. But actually, it's shown me that training really does prepare you for life after CCT, and the transition's actually been fairly smooth and no real hiccups or major issues so far, which I hope is true for most other people in my similar position in the first few 100 days post CCT. But yeah, I think, you know, as Mira says, the world is opening up again. Hopefully we'll be able to start to network and connect with people again in a more non-digital way. And I think that is something that really does need to be said about post CCT. When your VTS group disbands, you don't have access to that, like every weekly half day release and the sessions that you get there. It's always important to keep in touch, but also to stay connected with the wider GP community in the area that you are working in, because it's, you know, that is ultimately the best way to learn about the opportunities that exist and all of the different things that you can be getting involved in within your career.
I mean, I think we've said everything that needs to be said.
That is it, yeah. Basically, I think, you know, I think the takeaway from this is that I think, for, you know, as you've heard from myself, Tilla and Helena, and obviously we're not representative of everyone in our position, but, you know, by and large, I think people have quite a positive experience post-CCT, and there's just a huge variety of different ways that you can make the post-CCT world work for you. My biggest thing is that just the autonomy that you have post-CCT does feel really refreshing, and it is all worth it when you get there in the end. So keep working, as I know you all are, all the time, and striving for that CCT, and when you get there, you know, all that hard work will have paid off. So thanks for listening to another episode of Somewhere in Between, and we will be back with you very soon for another thrilling episode. Take care, Mira. Bye, Johannes.
Bye.
Bye.
There's going to be lots of editing for him on that one. I think there's a bit of fake cuts out. His sound was a little bit low at times. I don't know if we can increase it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Well, Bryn's pretty magical, isn't he? I'm sure he'll come up with something.
He should put that in his little bit at the end where you call him magical. He'll be loving it. Producer Bryn, we love you. Good night.